Hello and welcome to AC Sisterhood Speaks. It has been a while since our last episode. For the past month and a half or so, we were busy helping out with the AC Community Relief fundraiser to help earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria. The fundraiser was a huge success beyond our wildest dreams, and together with a number of other AC Community members, we ended up raising over $25,000. It was a hectic time, but we're so proud of the AC community for coming together for a great cause. So on behalf of the AC Sisterhood, we would like to once more say thank you to everyone who donated or contributed to the campaign in other ways. And now on to today's topic. Unfortunately, my co-host Lori couldn't be here today, so I will be solo hosting this interview. My guest today is Jali Johnson, author of the newly released Assassin's Creed novel, The Golden City. Welcome, Jali.
Thank you for having me.
The novel follows the adventures of Haitham and Basim in Constantinople sometime before the events of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, where they are tasked with protecting the Emperor's young son, Leo, who is the future heir to the throne and targeted by many enemies, including the Order of the Ancients. But before we get further into the plot, Jali, could you tell us a little bit about your background? How long have you been writing, and what other books have you worked on?
Oh my, well, I've been writing for probably over 20 years now, which saying that makes me feel old. But I've probably, my writing background goes all the way back to, I've been a lover of games and a geek my whole life. When I was about 5 years old, I used to hang around with my older brother and his friends. My older brother is 11 years older than I am. So when I was 5 years old, he was 16, and he used to get together with his friends in our parents' garage, and they used to play Dungeons and Dragons. And so 5-year-old me was fascinated by this. I would always be tagging along with them, listening to them play this amazing game about, you know, adventurers, fighting monsters, looking for treasure, and just having a good time. And to me, that sounded like the most incredible game of make-believe that I had ever, you know, encountered at 5 years old. And I was like, I can do this. I can play this game. And so I eventually got to play Dungeons and Dragons with my brother and his friends. I joined their gaming group. And from there, that sparked a love of fantasy and a love of reading and stories. And eventually, it led me to want to write and create fantasy worlds of my own and make my own contributions to these amazing settings. My first published novel was actually for the Dungeons & Dragons Forgotten Realms setting, published by Wizards of the Coast. I wrote several novels and short stories for that setting. Probably what I'm best known for, if I'm known for anything, is I also wrote a series of novels, fantasy novels for middle grade readers. The Solace series, the first book in that, was probably what I'm most known for, The Mark of the Dragonfly. And then I've kind of come full circle back to my gaming and geek roots, and most recently I wrote a Marvel X-Men novel for Aconyte Books, and I wrote a prequel novel for the upcoming movie, the Dungeons & Dragons movie Honor Among Thieves, called The Road to Neverwinter, and then I've also contributed to the Assassin's Creed franchise. So, big geek, big gamer. Yeah, that's pretty much my background.
Must be really cool to be able to work on a series that you've known and loved since childhood. And it sounds like you've done quite a lot of different franchises as well.
It's surreal sometimes to think about, especially with the Dungeons and Dragons movie coming out and, you know, these different franchises that everyone, you know, has loved, to be able to get to, you know, leave my mark on them in some small way. I've been very fortunate.
So how did you get involved with writing for the Assassin's Creed franchise? Were you familiar with the series before writing the book?
So I was. I have been a fan of Assassin's Creed for a while. I love playing tabletop board games, role-playing games, and also video games, and have for a long time. But it's actually my husband's fault that I got into Assassin's Creed, because I remember I used to work for my day job. I used to work in accounting and tax preparation. Every year from January to April would be, you know, hell, trying to, you know, get the taxes done, get everything. And I would work on an insane amount of hours, and I would tire myself out. So after every April 15th, after tax time, I would be just exhausted. And all I would do for several days after that would just be lay on the couch in this like exhaustion coma, trying to recover myself. And during that time, one of these years, this has been several years ago now, I think it goes back all the way to the first Assassin's Creed game, or maybe the second, but my husband was playing it. And I was laying on this on the couch in this exhausted stupor, watching him play this game, and I had no idea what it was. And so I started watching him play it, because I remember him spending an inordinate amount of time like trying to climb this building and sneak into this place and sneak up on this group of people. And I remember watching him try and fail several times, fall off the building, do different things. And I just got fascinated by this. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm playing this game. He's like, leave me alone. I'm like, but what are you trying to do? You keep climbing this building, and then he finally gets to the top, and he just like dives off of it. And I'm like, what are you doing? You spent all that time getting to the top of this building, now you're jumping off of it. He's like, you really just need to pay attention to the game if you want to know what it's about. And I was like, well, that seems like too much effort. I'm too tired. And he's like, just watch for a while. So I'm like, okay. So I start watching this game, and I forget, yeah, my memory is soup, but I forget what exactly it was, but I think it was the moment that it flashed back from, you know, the ancient time with the assassins, and it flashed to the Animus and that technology and this idea that this person in the present day or in the future was experiencing, you know, this genetic memory from the past. And that was when I zeroed in on it. I was like, what is this? I was like, and he's like, right, just keep paying attention. So that's what happened. I watched him play this game, and I got into the story of it, and the, you know, because I thought it was like a straightforward, you know, fantasy game, assassination, you know, quest, fantasy something. But then you added this whole other thing with the Animus and this whole depth to it, and that's kind of where I got hooked on it. I got hooked on the story, and then I started playing the game for myself. I'm never as good at playing the games as I am at watching someone else play them, but that's where I kind of got hooked on it. And so I've been a fan of the franchise for a while now. And then when I fast forward to like a year and a half ago, maybe now, I had just finished writing a Marvel X-Men novel for Aconite Books. And my editor and I were talking about a next project with them, and she asked if I was a fan of Assassin's Creed. And I said, yes, I absolutely am. And I said, why do you ask? And she said, well, we have something upcoming if you want to pitch for it. And so I did. I submitted a pitch, or several pitches, for this project. Didn't get picked, which I was very sad about, but I went on about my business. And then a few months later, my editor came back and said, we have another Assassin's Creed. Would you like to take another crack at it? And I was like, yes, give me another shot at this. And that pitch got accepted. And that's what eventually turned into the Golden City. So that's the long, convoluted story of my history with Assassin's Creed. It started because I was exhausted from tax preparation.
I love how you went all the way around back to that. And just to say, on a personal note, as a huge modern day fan, I'm just like giving you both thumbs up, because I love the modern day as well and the Animus stuff.
yeah, it's just, I mean, I wasn't expecting that when it happened. I was like, oh wow, this has got some serious depth to it. And yeah, and they've just built on it over the years. It's amazing.
I think it's really interesting that that's how it worked. So you're the one who came up with the pitch for this novel, and you submitted that to Ubisoft, is that right?
Yeah, well, I submitted it to my editor, and they, yeah, submitted it to Ubisoft. I had kind of the general outline of what they wanted, and specific things, and then I pitched some ideas to try to fit that, and yeah, to try to fit with what they were looking for.
So were you the one who came up with the idea of the novel taking place in Constantinople and the time period, or was that something that you had to workshop with Ubisoft?
I'm trying to remember. I feel like I feel like there were options for where it could take place. There was a narrow window of time, but I feel like there were options to where it could take place. But I remember they were excited about Constantinople. So that's what I zeroed in on.
Yeah, it's really cool because, of course, the series has been to Constantinople before in AC Revelations, but this takes place much earlier than that. So it was cool to kind of visit the place, the city, in both a game and a different novel in a different time. Yeah. It was very nice to see that. And so the story does take place in, I believe, 9th century Constantinople.
Yes.
And there is a great amount of detail dedicated to life in the imperial palace and how it almost seems like a city unto itself. Could you tell us a bit about your research process? Like, where did you start and how do you decide which historical details to focus on and what to leave out? And was there anything that surprised you?
I'm trying to remember. This, for one thing, I should say, this book... Probably this book and one other book that I've written in my career have taken as much research. This was so much research. And part of this is my fault because I start going down the rabbit hole with stories about, specifically about like the Byzantine Empire. I think I started with the geography of the city, its unique positioning, you know, bordering like the Bosphorus and the Sea of Marmara, how that, you know, that and its walls contributed to its defensible position. And from there, it was down the rabbit hole to like aspects of daily life in the city, the famous Greek fire, political structure in the city, religion, and just kind of going from there, because especially the Imperial Palace, because that was a fascinating point of interest for me, because just the idea of how big it got over the years, how many emperors, you know, built onto the place and contributed to making this like sprawling, massive complex with, you know, the hippodrome for the chariot races connected to it. So you have this whole complex that, in my mind, probably had to operate like a miniature city in and of itself to keep, you know, the whole thing running and to keep it, you know, according to the emperor's will or whatever. And but then there's this separate body of research, right, that is the, you know, how it all fits into the Assassin's Creed franchise and how it will fit with the characters of Basim and Hytham in Valhalla. And so one day it was research, you know, into palace life and the how much education the common person has in the city and the nobility, and then the next day it's let's rewatch all the cutscenes with Hytham in Assassin's Creed Valhalla to get an idea of his character. So it was the most surprising thing was just the oddness of the research sometimes, how it would go back and forth between these two different things. I think I was also surprised at how much technology, mechanisms, and inventions are described as being part of the palace. Because I think I talk at some point in the book about the emperor's throne room and how Hytham has heard that the throne can like rise suddenly in the air, so the emperor towers over his subjects, you know, to intimidate or impress them. And that was a detail that I actually read, that there actually was such a mechanism, you know, in the palace, and that there were these golden birds that could be made to sing through some kind of clockwork mechanisms, and how a lot of that had ended up being destroyed and melted down by the emperor because they were made of gold and he needed that to fund his wars, his project, his cities. And it was just little details like that were fascinating. I probably could have gone down so many other rabbit holes in researching for this book, but it was really a lot of fun to do.
I remember that detail from the book. And yeah, I'm surprised to hear that was based on something that actually existed. That's really cool.
Yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, I wouldn't have thought about the, and even just like how much of that technology, you know, was lost. You know, we just have no trace of it today. And how much, you know, just exists in these stories and historical accounts. It's really, yeah, it's kind of fascinating what we remember and what we lose.
I'm just curious about the historical angle of the emperor and his son. The novel portrays it as it wasn't really clear whether Leo, the son of the emperor, whether he was an illegitimate child, or, you know, it's kind of left as a mystery. Was that something that was based on historical research, or was that like your own idea that you brought in?
It was kind of a combination because I researched it and they did say at the time, this is a whole I didn't get to get into it as deeply in the novel as I could have, but it's just, it's like a soap opera. The relation, the interrelationships, the emperor, you know, his wife, the family. And yeah, there was a footnote about Leo, about there being speculation at the time that he might have been illegitimate. That he might have been the son of the emperor, of the previous emperor who was assassinated. And I think later it was disproven through DNA evidence that Leo actually was the emperor's son. He actually was legitimate. I think I did end up reading that. But just that one little footnote sparked a lot of the plot of the book for me because it got me to thinking, wow, so the emperor comes to power through assassination and he has the son who's going to eventually take over for him, but people are whispering, saying that, you know, he's illegitimate, he's not really your child, he's the child of your rival. You know, what might that have been like, you know, for the emperor to hear that, for the child to hear that, what might that have been? And it was really easy from there to pull in, you know, the alternate history of the, you know, the potential involvement of the Order of the Ancients and the Hidden Ones, and how might they have complicated this and taken advantage of it and used it to gain power in the city. And it's like the plot just spiraled out from there. It was one of those times where a little detail really kind of helped spur, you know, a lot of inspiration for me.
Yeah, it does provide a great sort of springboard of tension. I can imagine that that's a great place for the whole plot to kind of grow from.
Right.
So, as you mentioned before, the two main characters, Haitham and Basim, of course, first appeared in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Just as a personal note, people who know me may be aware that Basim is one of my favorite characters in Assassin's Creed.
Oh, my.
And his portrayal in this novel gets the official Six Keys seal of approval.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I was very impressed with both of their characterizations. Like, also Haitham. We saw some new sides to him that still felt consistent with the Haitham we knew from the game. Listeners will be happy to know he gets to see a lot more action here than just being confined to his hut all day long. So how familiar were you with the game and characters beforehand? You mentioned that part of your research was rewatching cutscenes of them together over and over to kind of get their characterization on point. Did you receive guidance from Ubisoft regarding characterization? And were you able to bring your own ideas to the table?
So I had played Valhalla. I had played a pretty good chunk of it during like quarantine lockdown for the pandemic. But when I was doing that, I had what I call pandemic brain, which is like there are like video games I played during quarantine and books I read some amazing books. Couldn't tell you what they were about now because my brain just all the information just spilled out.
Understandable.
So that kind of has been a recurring thing. I picked up a book the other day. I was like, I read this during quarantine and I have no idea what it's about, but I remember I liked it. So it was kind of that way with the game. I remembered that I liked it. I remembered nothing about it. So I had to go back and rewatch the cutscenes and remember.
And to be fair, it is a long game.
Yes, it's a long game. It's a lot of information. And you spend, or at least I do when I'm playing an Assassin's Creed game, I spend a lot of time, like my body clenched with tension, you know, to try to make sure I end up not being very good at fighting the enemies and climbing the stuff and falling off things. And so I'm really focused on that, hyper-focused on that, and not so much focused on the story as much. So it's kind of relaxing to get to go back and, you know, just watch the cutscenes from YouTube and not have to worry about advancing in the game. And you can just, you know, focus on the characters. So yeah, that's what I did. I went back, refresh my memory on the relationship between these two. And I did receive some guidance from Ubisoft regarding their characterization and their relationship, and specifically things that at that time I didn't know with regards to Basim's role before this in Mirage. So that was helpful to get info regarding that. But they were very much open for me to bring my own my own ideas to the character, specifically to Hytham, because I wasn't sure when I was developing the burgeoning relationship, specifically between Hytham and Leo, I wasn't sure how much, you know, Ubisoft was going to allow when it came to that, or how much they were going to think that was consistent with Hytham's character and his development. And I was very pleasantly surprised that they let me, you know, go and do the things that I wanted to do with that relationship and developing it. So I was very, very happy with how that turned out.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I was really happy to see Hytham really come into his own in this novel, because he didn't really get as much screen time in the game as many people would have liked. We saw a lot of new sides to him. He sort of has to wrestle with personal feelings about the mission versus his duty, and his worldviews kind of come out clearly. I came away enjoying him even more than I had before, so kudos to you.
Thank you. That makes me very happy.
The book also introduces some original characters, including Tira. Am I saying that correctly? Tira or Thyra?
I always say you can pronounce the characters' names any way that you want to. When I would write for kids, I let them pronounce the names any way they want, because whenever they ask me for the true pronunciation and I tell them, they always look disappointed. So I let readers can decide how they want to pronounce.
I think I say it mentally as Thyra or Tira, because there is a similarly named character in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and there they pronounce it Thyra, I believe.
There you go.
And she's a female Viking warrior and leader of the Eagle Clan. Could you tell us a bit more about her? Like, what was the inspiration behind her, and is there anything that you can share about her background?
So she was she really had to pull a lot of, she had to do a lot, multiple things in the story, because she was my big connection between the Vikings and specifically the Viking presence in Constantinople at that time. And then also the connection to Hytham and Basim and their mission. And she also represents the whole of like the Varangian Guard in a way, because you have this organization that is dedicated to protecting the position of the emperor, right? Which is an important distinction to make. They are in charge of being extremely loyal in the protection of the position of emperor, meaning whoever holds that position earns their loyalty. It's not about the person. And I always thought that was a fascinating detail when I read about it, because if the guard would happen to be serving an emperor and he was assassinated and the assassin, you know, took the emperor's place, they would serve the assassin because the assassin is now emperor and they serve the emperor, the position, not the person. And so I thought that also brought an interesting complication to the relationship between Leo and his father, because they are co-emperors. So the Varangian Guard would owe their loyalty to both. And when you have Leo's father targeting him for assassination and murder, that puts the Varangian Guard in an extremely complicated position. And so that's how I wanted Tira to come and embody those complications and embody that connection between the Vikings and the city and their loyalties. And so that's how she kind of had to fulfill multiple roles in the novel.
I couldn't really get a read on her age. At least I don't remember the novel really mentioning that. So is that something, did you leave that vague on purpose? Or is she on the older side? Because the only thing I remember about her description-wise is that she had gray hair. So I always pictured her as a bit of an older woman, but I don't know, I could be wrong.
No, you're right. I didn't tell her specific age. I often keep characters' ages vague. But yes, I pictured her as being an older warrior as well. Yes. Older, seasoned, experienced.
Like you mentioned, it was a very interesting kind of conundrum, I guess, for the Varangian Guard, you know, to kind of have that conflict there. They are more like mercenaries in a way. They're not necessarily loyal to one person. They're just loyal to whoever holds the position of power.
Loyal and very fierce, very fearsome.
Yeah, but she was an interesting character as well.
Thank you.
The book sits between two games, AC Valhalla, of course, and the as-yet unreleased AC Mirage, serving as both a sequel and a prequel of sorts. Several scenes seem to reference events fans would recognize as nods to Valhalla, but which the characters themselves have not experienced yet, as well as foreshadowing events Bassem will undergo in Mirage. How did you go about weaving in these scenes without revealing too much? Did you get to play or review an early build of Mirage? Or did Ubisoft tell you what to include? Or did you have some ideas of your own?
That sounds so complicated when it's laid out like that. Because you're right. It's like, it's a prequel. It's a prequel to one game and a sequel to another as yet unreleased game. So yes, that was a unique challenge. I did not get a chance to play the game in advance. That would have been so cool.
I'm sure. Yeah.
It would have been so awesome. That was actually the first thing that my husband said when I told him about this. He's like, are you going to get to play an advanced copy of the game? And I was like, probably not. And I was right about that.
What was the timeline for this? Like, when did you start writing the novel?
Oh, gosh. Let me think. This has been in the works for a long time. I want to say we started working on it last January, not this January, like last January, I feel like was when we kicked into high gear on it and had gotten the pitch settled and I was starting writing, or it might've been a little bit later, but it's been some time. So I wasn't sure on this timeline, you know, how much information would be out there about the game, you know, by the time the book was announced and by the time the book was released.
That also makes a lot of sense that you didn't have the chance to play an early build because there wouldn't have been a playable build at that time, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, exactly. That was always going to be a pipe dream. But they did give me a detailed breakdown of the plot and specifically Basim's journey and his... you know, where he ends up specifically in his headspace at the end of the game, which was something I was very interested in because I knew that part of the unique challenge of this book was going to be situating it in this small sliver of time, capturing this moment in time after, you know, after Mirage and before Valhalla, and picking up from where Bazin is emotionally at the end of that game and having him and Hyathan end up in the relationship as it stands at the beginning of Valhalla. And the challenge was creating the circumstances in the novel that led to the development of their relationship and Bazin's continuing journey. And, you know, starting from a place in the Valhalla game where, you know, Hyathan respects Bazem, even if he doesn't always agree with him. And I wanted to focus on how that particular dynamic came about with those two. And that led to the plot of the Golden City and specifically Hyatham's journey, discovering more about himself, you know, what he believes in, what he's willing to compromise and what he cares about. And also evoking maybe some shades of similar things that, you know, Bazem might have gone through, you know, that we'll maybe get to learn about later. I can't say anything more because I feel like Ubisoft assassins are going to come out and just, you know, stab me and can silence me if I say too much.
Oh, yeah, understandable. But, there are also so many scenes that I wish I could talk about here, you know, referencing scenes that I thought were really interesting and that I felt were sort of foreshadowing what Bazem might undergo in Mirage. But of course, I hope as many people as possible will actually read the book, so I don't want to spoil anything here. So
I'll read the book. Go read the book, then, yes. And then come back and tell me how I did.
Yes. But I just want to say, yeah, I thought there were many interesting scenes that felt like they were foreshadowing something, and they were very exciting. One potential reference that caught my attention involves a scene where Bazem and Hyathan are fighting a group of attackers, and one of the assailants is described as having a faint scar at the base of his neck. Fans of Valhalla might remember that a sage named Rig confronted Basim in Constantinople sometime before the events of Valhalla. So I have to ask, was this scene a reference, like a conscious reference to Rieg?
This is one of these situations where I should say, absolutely, I absolutely planned that, and good on you for catching that and finding that. I should lie and say that, but the truth is that, remember when I said that about pandemic brain and playing ball? No, I did not make the connection on that at all. I wish I had. So yeah, I'll tell everyone else from now on that's absolutely what I intended.
That's actually really funny, because I was so sure that it was a conscious decision, but now it's like forever remains a mystery. But if it is, then it's one of those perfect coincidences.
Yeah, maybe it was like something my subconscious remembered.
Yeah.
My pandemic brain was not functioning, but my subconscious was like
it's definitely okay. My head canon.
Yeah. No, you should definitely keep it that way. And I'll tell everyone else that I intended that. We'll just keep this one between us.
I've heard that same sentiment from game developers many times, that, you know, fans make a lot of these connections in their heads that end up being happy coincidences, because the devs were like, well, we didn't actually plan it that way, but sure, you can read it that way if you want to.
Oh yeah, that's one of the great things about this too, is making those connections. No, that's awesome. I love the deep diving in that too. It's great. That's one of the great things about being a fan, talking about these theories and discussing them and what they might mean and everything. That's one of the great things about loving these franchises. It really brings us together, you know, as a community.
And Assassin's Creed is, of course, all about conspiracies and hidden secrets, so it's perfect for our community.
Sure, sure.
And finally, I would like to ask, are there any current or upcoming other projects you're working on that you would like to mention? Where can people follow you and your work?
I have a couple of things coming up that I'm super excited about. I can't even tell you how excited I am, but they're firmly under non-disclosure agreements right now, and I can't say anything.
Understandable.
Oh man, I wish I could. But if you want to follow me for updates, usually the best place to do that is my website, which is juliejohnson.com, or on Twitter at juliejohnson, for as long as Twitter functions in the world. And yeah, so when I can make an announcement about the stuff I'm working on next, that's where you'll find it out. So stay tuned.
We'll put those links in the description.
Awesome.
And I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This has been awesome. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun.
Like I said before, I personally really enjoyed the book, and I hope many people will check it out. It's a page turner.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining the interview. And for our listeners, I hope you will join us again next time on AC Sisterhood Speaks. And we wish you all a good week.